fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Happy New Year and welcome to our annual Route 51 Regional Talk Radio Year-End Review Show. I'm Glenn Moberg, and for the next hour, we'll be looking at the top news stories and the people, places, and politics that made the year 2009 a memorable one. We will be revisiting some of the guests that we brought you during our live broadcasts on Thursday afternoon, and also listening again to some of the memorable live musical moments that originated from our Wausau studios. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get started. The year 2009 began with the inauguration of Barack Obama as President of the United States, a clear break with the past, and something that inspired Wisconsin Democrats. We caught up with them in January at an inauguration party at the Labor Temple in Wausau and asked them what their hopes were for the new year.
Universal health care would be a wonderful, wonderful dream. Whether it'll be done in the first year or not, I don't know. But, you know, you got to aim high.
Health care and education. I don't want those ignored.
I'd want him to do something substantial in health care. But right now, I think he's going to have all his sights trained on getting the economy moving.
Stop the war in Iraq and bring the troops home.
I'd like to see prosecutions for crimes that were committed during the Bush administration because the world is watching.
Returning our sense of civility.
And while Obama supporters saw the passage of health care legislation in Washington, their hopes for civility would not be realized as opponents of the president's agenda protested the health care and stimulus bills at Tea Party rallies, including one held in downtown Wausau on Tax Day, April 15th.
Are you tired of politicians who want government to control your health care?
Yes!
Are you tired of politicians who want to take your wealth and redistribute it to others?
Yes!
Are you tired of politicians who seek to change America from a capitalist to a socialist nation?
Yes!
Taxes are out of control. The government is no longer listening to the people. All they want to do is spend. They don't ask the people whether it's okay to spend it or not.
I want to protest the tax and spending of our government.
I'm tired of what the government's doing, and it's time to take things back and have the people run this nation the way it should be.
Much of the anger at the Tea Party protests was directed at 7th District Congressman Dave Obie, who as chair of the House Appropriations Committee, wrote the $780 billion stimulus bill designed to blunt the effects of the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. We asked Obie about the criticism.
How do you take people seriously when they say things like Barack Obama should be compared to the Antichrist, or when they say that we are spreading the wealth since 1917 like Stalin, Lenin, Kim Jong-il, and Obama?
Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn just this week called the stimulus package a failure. He noted that unemployment continues to go up and will probably hit 10%. Cornyn said President Obama and the Democratic leadership promised no more than 8% unemployment.
That's absolute nonsense.
That's what he said.
Well, that isn't the first time that what Senator Cornyn has said is absolute nonsense, so he's just being consistent. Let's give him credit for that. The fact is, if you go back and look at my words, and I went back and checked every word in the congressional record, and I stated at the time that I expected unemployment to go well above 10%, the question was whether it would go even higher than that.
It would go well above 10% even if the stimulus package
yes.
was passed.
For people like Senator Cornyn and the Republican leadership in the Congress in general to squawk about what we're doing, it's like the crowd that ran the car into the ditch now squawking about the way that the recovery crew is trying to pull a car out of the ditch. They don't have a really good track record in terms of running this economy.
Congressman Obie and other Democrats in Congress will be challenged this coming year by Republicans who think the stimulus bill and health care reform legislation were ill-advised. One of Obie's critics is Ashland County District Attorney Sean Duffy, a Republican who announced his intentions to run for Obie's seat at a rally in Wausau.
They're mortgaging our future and the future of our children and the future of our grandchildren. And I think it's wrong to spend and borrow on the backs of the next generation. But that's exactly what they're doing. Dave Obie says he stands for Wisconsin values. Well, the last time I checked, spending money we do not have is not a Wisconsin value.
Every 2 years he runs, he gets elected. And a lot of people who disagree with him ideologically vote for him because of the amount of money that he brings into the district. Now, if you get elected, You're going to be in a Democratic administration. You're not going to be on the Appropriations Committee. You're not going to have any seniority, and you're not going to be able to bring anything into the district for anybody. So, practically speaking, why should anybody vote for you?
So let's talk about that, Glenn. The important issue here is that we're spending or borrowing $1.8 trillion this year alone, and most of that's coming from China and the Treasury. We have a deficit that's $11.5 trillion. The money that Dave Obey brings back here is being borrowed from China, and our kids are going to have to pay that back.
Ashland County District Attorney Sean Duffy, who will face a Republican primary challenge this coming year from the man who ran against Dave Obey in 2008, Portage County organic farmer Dan Milkey, who says he can beat Obey in the general election and Duffy in the primary.
I'm more aggressive in holding to the Constitution and the fundamental principles. You had Sean on the other day, and he kind of explained that, gave that light a little bit when you dealt with the situation of abortion. You know, he, by the way, mentioned going to the courts and going to the states. For me, the issues are more clear-cut, and you need to deal with them. We need to bring this nation back to its place. I'm going to do less negotiating and plea deals behind the scenes. I would be more aggressive in trying to bring the points
home. You just mentioned abortion. Where do you stand on the issue?
I'm 100% pro-life. I was supposed to be an aborted fetus. So I'm fairly prejudiced in that territory on that, and I'm strong on that. But I believe that's a constitutional issue, and I believe it deals with the rights of life, liberty, you know, that we have based on the Constitution.
Now the presupposition of your premise is that a fetus, even from the moment of conception,
is
a living human being.
It's a person.
With constitutional rights. There are a lot of people and a lot of religious people who disagree with you. So I'll ask you the same question I asked Sean Duffy. Why are you willing to impose your private religious beliefs on the entire nation?
I guess, Glenn, what I'm doing is I'm telling you where I'm going and what I'm going to do, and I'm clear. And the only way my private beliefs will be put on you is if the people elect me.
Republican congressional candidate Dan Milkey. We debated the health care issue this past October on Route 51 with Democratic State Representative Donna Seidel, who favors the president's plan, and Wausau heart surgeon Dr. Fernando Riveron, who opposes it.
Every single day, 14,000 Americans lose their job. That could be us, our neighbors, our friends. And when we lose our job, most often we lose our health care. So anybody can be just a day away from a catastrophic situation.
Leaving Cuba, and my father was a doctor, so he lost everything and came here to this country, had to retrain as a physician. The word socialism was anathema. You know, to even consider government top-down bureaucratic control of something as personal as healthcare is difficult with my upbringing.
Another national news story with local ties was the president's decision to close the prison at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. A Route 51 debate in February pitted Liz Bradley, a Wausau native who now works for the Center for Constitutional Rights, against Staff Sergeant Brian Jopek, a Merrill native who now serves as a public affairs officer at Guantanamo.
They have been treated, most of them treated very, very horribly. The majority of them are just mentally broken men and need rehabilitation more than anything. There definitely have been men in Guantanamo who have been tortured.
None of that's been going on for the last several years. Our people are doing everything they can. They're bending over backwards. Detainees complaining about the condition of the lettuce in their salad get addressed. If their lettuce is a little too brown, that gets fixed immediately.
And we held other debates this past political year. In March, Route 51 sponsored a live face-off between the two candidates for Marathon County Judge, District Attorney Jill Falstead, and Defense Attorney Peter Rotter.
Certainly as a judge, I will be very sensitive to the interests and concerns of victims and recognize that the impact of the crime on the victim is always of utmost importance.
Needs of victims are important, but apparently, and I think appropriately, they are not the end all. We certainly don't want to have our justice system devolve into a system of blood feuds.
Jill Falstead would later defeat Peter Rotter and become the newest circuit judge for Marathon County. In April, at Wausau's First Universalist Unitarian Church, Wisconsin Public Radio taped a forum on the Palestinian-Israeli conflict called Peace in the Promised Land with Rabbi Dan Danson, UW-Stevens Point Professor Emeritus Neil Lewis, former Gaza residents John Visti and Elaine Stroik, UW-Marathon County History Professor Jeff Lee, and Tracy Feldman, a singer-songwriter from Stevens Point.
I'd bring these flowers home when I was young. They'd shine at our table each night like the afternoon sun. But our foundation started to shake, our trust like a window so sharp when it breaks. And compassion could be a mistake, can't forget what's been done. But I remember once we played Morning Over the Stones. From the houses that fell where that night the tank shells had flown. None of us wanted to lose, but the weeds by the fence never choose on which side they'll grow. It is all that they know.
The wall means that many people have been cut off from their neighbors, schools, health clinics, and agricultural land. Religiously, both Muslims and Christians have been cut off from the holy city of Jerusalem, unable to visit the sites dear to them without exceptional permits.
One of my dictums on the situation, it applies to other areas as well, but especially the Arab-Israeli conflict, is that everybody keeps score, but nobody counts very well. And, you know, they know very much the violence that was created against them, but kind of forget their own.
The toughest issues, at least from where I sit, seem to be two. One is the substantive recognition by the Palestinian body politic of Israel's right to exist as a Jewish nation. And the other difficult issue is the establishment of facts on the ground that would allow for a viable Palestinian state. Until those two things get settled, we will be left with what we have today.
Rabbi Dan Danson and other participants at the Peace in the Promised Land Forum this past April. If the warring factions in Israel are having trouble with forgiveness, one woman may provide an example. Ava Moses Kaur came to Marshfield in October, a victim with her twin sister of the medical experiments at the Nazi concentration camp in Auschwitz. Ava Moses Kaur says that now she can even forgive the notorious Joseph Mengele.
Forgiveness is much more for the victim than the perpetrator. And there is nothing that a victim can do that will bring them that kind of relief, freedom, empowerment as forgiveness will. Doctors are treated like gods. If you do experiments for the sake of science and not for the sake of helping human beings, you're heading in the direction of the Nazi doctors and the Mengeles.
Auschwitz survivor Ava Moses Kaur. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to the Route 51 2009 year-end review show. We've got much more after this short break.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and this is the Route 51 2009 year-end review show on Wisconsin Public Radio. If we had to name one top regional news story of the past year, it would be the trials, convictions, and sentencing of Dale and Lalani Newman for the death of their 11-year-old daughter, Madeline Kara. The Newmans prayed instead of seeking medical help as Kara slipped into a coma and died from treatable diabetes. We were in the courtroom every day for both trials, and we were there when Dale Newman was found guilty.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Dale Newman, guilty.
It took more than 15 hours of deliberation for the jury to reach its guilty verdict. And when they did, Dale and Lalani Newman and their supporters left the courthouse quickly.
Hey, there's a gag order, man.
No comment.
Judge Vincent Howard had instructed the jurors that religious freedom is absolute when it comes to belief, but not when it comes to conduct. And he said he wasn't surprised that the jury had trouble reaching a decision.
In a case like this, I think it can be expected. I don't know if you can call it routine.
There was little that was routine about Dale Newman's trial, including the defendant's own comments on the witness stand.
Dale R. Newman is dead, but Jesus Christ is within me. In the life I now live, I live by the faith of the Son of God.
Newman steadfastly defended his decision to pray and not call a doctor as 11-year-old Madeline Kara's life slipped away. His attorney, Jay Cronenwetter, said he did not break the law because Newman honestly thought his prayers would save Kara.
There are many people who have a drastically different worldview. They have different understandings of what life is.
But prosecutor Lamont Jacobson asked Newman's wife, Lalani, if they were more interested in proving their faith than saving their daughter's life.
You and your husband, both in your statement, said it was a test of faith.
a test of faith. Well, like I said, everything for us is about faith. It's about trusting in God.
Dale and Lalani Newman could each get 25 years in prison when they're sentenced in October. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
The Newmans were sentenced in October to much less than the maximum. They will each spend 1 month in jail every year for the next 7 years, or until Kara would have turned 18. Judge Vincent Howard had these words for Dale Newman on the day of sentencing.
While parents may be free to become martyrs themselves, it does not follow that they are free in identical circumstances to make martyrs of their children. In this nation, the sanctity of your religious beliefs is protected by the constitutional guarantee. But what is overlooked, and overlooked by you, that the guarantee is a limited one. It protects religious belief, but not religious conduct and practices.
Dale and Lalani Newman's convictions are being appealed. There were uplifting stories this past year as well in north central Wisconsin. In November, a sculpture was dedicated in downtown Wausau with the word peace written in English and Arabic on the wings of a dove.
What a great day for central Wisconsin.
Wausau Mayor Jim Tipple looked out at almost 300 people, including representatives of the U.S. State Department and the Egyptian consulate, who had turned out to help a visiting student, Mustafa Saleh, realize his personal dream for peace.
Today, I don't understand how all these people love me.
When Saleh arrived in Wausau, he feared for his safety because his friends and family had told him that Americans don't like Muslims. When he was welcomed with open arms, he came up with the idea for a peace sculpture.
That's what we need. That's what you need. That's all we need. We need peace. We need to live in peace.
Mustafa Saleh's dream became a reality in Wausau today. A metal sculpture of a dove on the planet Earth, the word peace written in English on one wing, in Arabic on another, and in dozens of other languages on the pedestal below. Helping him realize his dream, retired mechanical engineer Pat Plunkett, who came up with the design and donated a year of his time.
In my opinion, if it saves one skirmish, if it saves one life, then the 11 months I have spent on this so far is well worth it. And I'm not done with it.
Not done with it because now there are plans to put an identical statue in Mustafa Saleh's hometown of Cairo, Egypt, and in other cities and towns across America. As the statue was unveiled, three white doves were released, and for a moment, it seemed like there could be peace on Earth. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Antigo native James Bradley had a bestseller with a new book on the Imperial Cruise. And as James joined us by cell phone from Texas, we surprised him with a very special guest, his mother, Betty. James, if you'd like to say hi to your mom, Betty.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Mommy.
Hi, Jim.
Oh, good. You're there. I called you at home to tell you to listen.
Well, I've been here through and heard it all. And I'm really honored to be here and listening to you and Glenn Moberg talk about your book, The Imperial Cruise. And it's unbelievable that that book got on the New York Times 10 bestseller list in only 4 days after it was available for sale. You're doing good, Jim.
Well, thank you. And I got to say something about northern Wisconsin. This is the single best interview I've had in the whole week. Glenn's read the whole book. He knows it. Thank you.
Well, I did pick up the book, and I couldn't put it down. James, you often tell the story about how your dad didn't talk much about his experiences in World War II.
Yeah, you know, I didn't. That's really why I wrote Flags of Our Fathers, is that I just wanted to find out why he didn't talk. He was a corpsman on Iwo Jima, and he witnessed a massacre. He had a lot of reasons not to talk. My mom sent me a Xerox of a letter that my father wrote home from Iwo Jima a couple days after the flag raising.
Betty, did you ever think that that Xerox copy of that letter would lead to a writing career?
No, I certainly did not. You know, Jim graduated from the University of Wisconsin with a major in East Asian history, and his father and I looked at each other and thought, what in the world will he ever do with that?
James Bradley, author of Flags of Our Father and The Imperial Cruise, on the phone from Texas, surprised by a visit in our studio from his mom, Betty. And of course, this past year on Route 51, we again featured live music from our Wisconsin Public Radio studios. In July, we welcomed David Dahl, a singer-songwriter from Rhinelander, who also teaches at Pelican Elementary School. In this next clip, David sings and plays his acoustic, while I accompany him on electric guitar and mimic some of the sounds of the subject of his composition, a tribute to the state bird of Wisconsin.
Yeah, mosquitoes.
I hear that buzzing.
There it is. I'm sitting here with a mosquito buzzing in my ear. I'm sitting here with a mosquito buzzing in my ear. I'm sitting here. I'm slapping it with the back of my hand. I'm missing it, but the mosquito buzzes round and then he tries to land. I'm missing it. Late at night, I go to bed. That crazy mosquito, it crawls around my hair. Wait a minute, what's that I hear? That mosquito's trying to get inside of my ear.
Then give me a land where the bright diamond sand flows leisurely down to the stream, where the graceful white swan goes gliding along like a maid in a heavenly dream.
I'm Glenn Moberg. Welcome back to the Route 51 2009 Year-End Review Show. In August, we featured jazz singer extraordinaire and Wisconsin's very own Janet Planet, who had some new twists on some old songs about the cities and landscapes of America in her new CD of The I Sing.
And the stars are not cloudy. 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 And the stars are not cloudy.
Janet Planet doing Home on the Range. You know, I was listening, and I realized there are lyrics to that song that I've never heard before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, a lot of those old standards, it kind of reminds me of Ray Charles. Remember when he did America?
Mm-hmm.
He started
yes.
out with the second verse instead of starting with the yeah. first verse.
Yes, I think I heard that just recently. You know, and that is one of the aspects of this project as well. It was shared with me from a musician that I adore, Gene Bertoncini. He said, when you learn a song, try not to learn it from a recording by another singer. Try to learn it from the actual music that the composer had written. And when we received the music for this project, we found a whole bunch of verses that I had never heard before, and verses up front. There's a version of Way Down Yonder in New Orleans. I had never yeah. heard the verse up front, and it really sets up the body of the song, especially in light of what they've been through in the last 5 years. So anyway, it's like unveiling little treasures, lyrical treasures, when you go to the source.
That's true. Jazz singer, Wisconsin's very own Janet Planet on Route 51 in August. In February of last year, we took you to the ski jumping competition of the Badger State Winter Games in Iola, where we caught up with a young and very enthusiastic participant. A crowd of family and friends looks up with anticipation as 11-year-old Dakota Dieter of Scandinavia perches on top of the Iola ski jump.
From Iola, his last ride was 14 meters. Let's hear it for Dakota Dieter.
The 11-year-old flies down the hill, becomes airborne, lands on both skis, then belly flops and slides to a halt. His parents, Dan and Sean, run to his side as he gets up and shakes off the snow.
Very proud. He's pushing himself pretty hard.
you know, he's really focused and he really wants to do it and he's good at it.
How focused and how fearless is young Dakota Dieter?
I mean, at first when I started, I was a little scared, but it's like once I put on my skis and I'm flying down that track, it's like nothing else matters. I run on adrenaline and nothing else.
What's your ambition, Dakota?
Go to the Olympics and jump the biggest jump there is.
You could say Dakota is getting a jump start at Wisconsin's own Winter Olympics, the Badger State Games. Over 1,000 people come to tiny Iola each year for the ski jumping and for the community's winter carnival with its traditional Norwegian dinner.
They enjoy it. They put this show on every year. It just seems to get bigger every year.
So Dan, because you're from Scandinavia, does that mean you have to eat lutefisk too?
Well, I kind of hope not because I've never tried it.
Dakota, what about you?
I really want to try it.
No fear.
He's got no fear.
Flying off the Iola ski jump at the age of 11 is one thing, but eating lutefisk, now that's the true measure of courage. In Iola, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And one of the things that we're very proud of this year is our new Wisconsin Public Radio studio at UW Stevens Point. And we christened it in style this past October with a live broadcast with Jean-Michel Cousteau, son of the legendary Jacques Cousteau, who spent a week with students inspiring them with their work to save the planet's oceans.
What I've done all week is to make sure that the people who honoring me with their presence, understand the connections that they have with the ocean. The fact that the rain that is falling right now is the ocean, that the water they're drinking is the ocean, that the skiing they're going to do this winter is the ocean. And so we all connected to the ocean one way or the other. Unfortunately, because we are land creatures, we use it as a sewage, a trash can. Mm-hmm. And we're affecting our life support system, and we're affecting what's living it, what is living in it. We're destroying the habitats.
We used to have the feeling, human beings, for so long that the oceans were so vast and so deep that there was no way we could affect them.
Well, we
that was wrong.
Well, that was wrong because in those days there were fewer people. We now more than 6.5 billion people. We add in another 100 million people to the planet every year, so the demand and the pressure on a finite resource, which is the planet, is increasing, and that we've reached certain levels where nature is saying, I can't handle it anymore.
And even as Jean-Michel Cousteau spoke, environmentalists and conservationists in Stevens Point were worried about an environmental problem closer to home. We spoke to UWSP's Natural Resources Professor George Kraft as the Little Plover River, once a Class A trout stream, dried up for the fifth consecutive year.
There was a fish kill again. The Little Plover went dry again in the stretch where it has been going dry for the fifth year in a row. This was a very important trout stream. It was used for a lot of famous trout study work. It was also the subject of a study in a 1960 film showing that too much pumping could dry up a river, which is, of course, just exactly what's been happening here. If we're not careful, we're always going to find ways to use too much water and wreck or pollute our lakes and streams, and it's another case of why we have to take care of these resources that really make Wisconsin special, which is our water.
And there was another environmental catastrophe only a few miles to the north. The Big Eau Plaine Reservoir near Mosinee suffered a massive fish kill in March, brought about by agricultural runoff of phosphates and manure, heavy snow cover, and a malfunctioning aerator. Tim Garrigan, the president of the local citizens group, was horrified by what he saw.
It's going to be terrible. I mean, I went down on Saturday to look at the park, and it's just sad. They're just belly up everywhere. Three big muskies, it was just awful. I can't imagine what the smell is going to be like. We now have high phosphorus, high E. coli, high nitrogen levels. This water, then, is really polluted. What we're asking for is more water. From the old saying that you learn in school, the solution to pollution is dilution.
This fall, that malfunctioning aerator was replaced, and there are hopes that the Big Eau Plaine will eventually recover. What is really needed for our lakes, rivers, and streams in north-central Wisconsin is rain, and plenty of it. There was a positive story for the environment and for our local economy in September, as the Domtar Paper Mill in Rothschild and We Energies announced plans for a biomass plant that would use wood pulp and not coal or oil to generate power. Governor Jim Doyle was there, and he had these words.
Our opportunity is renewable energy, wind, solar, biomass, and other forms of energy. The great northern forest of this state can be much of the answer to our energy challenges.
Route 51 also featured a number of authors who write about the environment and the outdoors. One of them, Rib Mountain resident George Sandel, whose book, The Road to Damascus and Beyond, chronicles his decision to hike the 2,400-mile Appalachian Trail at the age of 62.
I can't think of anything that brought me more pleasure than camping out in the middle of nowhere, knowing that pretty much there wasn't another human being on earth that knew where I was at. Yeah, it's a pretty rigid schedule to do a through hike, but still, I knew that all I had to do was get up and hike 15 miles and I was done for the day. I didn't have to pay bills and go through all those other things that we normally associate with everyday living.
And maybe, George, sometimes what we think is so important in everyday living really isn't as important as the fundamentals, the basics.
Absolutely.
George Sandel of Rib Mountain, author of The Road to Damascus and Beyond. Route 51 also spent time with another writer, naturalist and illustrator Julie Zickfuss, a frequent contributor to National Public Radio. She thinks that Americans suffer from a nature deficit disorder.
When I go outside, I get in a completely different zone than I'm in when I'm sitting in front of my stupid computer. I think that's what the woods does for me. I can think bigger thoughts than I can think when I'm distracted by 20 different things at my desk. I have people say to me, you know, I don't get out of my cubicle for weeks at a time. And I think, you poor thing. That means your priorities aren't straight. You've got to get yourself out because you can't complain about having no connection with nature if you never even put on a hiking boot.
Naturalist Julie Zickfuss, whose illustrations were featured this past summer at the Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum in Wausau. Route 51 did a live show at the Woodson just a few weeks ago with photojournalist Kevin Rivoli to discuss his exhibit In Search of Norman Rockwell's America, an exhibit that pairs his black and white photographs with Rockwell's iconic paintings. Round of applause, please, for our extraordinary guest, photographer Kevin Rivoli. Let's get started by asking Kevin the obvious question. What gave you the idea for the exhibit?
In the early 90s, my wife and I went to the Norman Rockwell Museum, and it was there that I learned that the critics weren't very kind to Rockwell in the sense that they said that the America that he painted didn't exist. It was idyllic, that he made it up in his mind. And at the time, I was a working photojournalist, and I had a lot of these Rockwell-esque moments already in my files. And I said to my wife, that's ridiculous. I've got a lot of these images right now. So I put together a mock-up of a book, and I used one Norman Rockwell image. And so my wife got online, and she started doing some research, and she found that, you know, this picture went with this Rockwell, and this picture went with this Rockwell. And the next thing you know, we had 150 pairings. And
so you're crediting your wife with the idea.
Oh, my wife was instrumental in this whole project, absolutely.
This is a wise man.
Absolutely.
Kevin Rivoli, live at the Woodson Art Museum, In Search of Norman Rockwell's America. Well, if you needed proof that Norman Rockwell's America is still alive and well, all you had to do is visit the Wisconsin Valley Fair this past summer and catch up with the 4-H kids in the poultry barn. So you think city life is noisy? In the poultry barn of the Wisconsin Valley Fair, hundreds of roosters are giving their young owners something to crow about, including 14-year-old Haley Dexter of Rosholt.
Well, I have 15 birds here, 4 geese, some pigeons, and 4 chickens.
No partridge in a pear tree?
Oh, no, not this time.
Haley and the other 4-H kids have been raising their birds since January. And according to poultry supervisor Linda Plockelman, they can get downright parental.
They're their babies. The week of the fair, you're washing your birds in soapy water and rinsing them and grooming. They have to have their toenails cut. They have to have their beaks trimmed.
Plockelman says the experience not only teaches the 4-H'ers about raising birds, it teaches them about life.
When you're in 4-H, the fair is the highlight usually of your whole year. You work all year long for that one week at the fair, and sometimes it can be a little disappointing because maybe it's show day and your bird or your cow just decides they're not going to get up that day.
Haley Dexter agrees. She says being in 4-H is like
taking a picture of reality. You just see how life is going to be.
What do you mean taking a picture of reality?
Some people are just stuck in their video games and iPods, and they just don't get a chance to see what's really happening out there.
So you young city slickers stuck in virtual reality, take a trip to the country. You might find out it's not all that bad. You might even learn something. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. This is the Route 51 Regional Talk Radio 2009 Year-End Review Show. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You are listening to the Route 51 2009 Year-End Review Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. One of the most disturbing trends of the past year was the continued problem of family violence in central Wisconsin. Marathon County now ranks second in the state behind only Milwaukee in the number of domestic homicides. The women's community held forums on the issue, and this past summer, an internationally revered Hmong leader, General Vang Pao, spoke to a crowd of hundreds in Wausau, urging Hmong men to treat women with respect.
When she marries you, you have to give her love and don't hurt her. That's why we have to suffer today, because we forget what marriage is all about. We are Hmong. We are smart. We are very beautiful people. We have a great culture, and we don't want to have a bad name for Hmong people. Do your best to be a role model. I'm telling you today to stop.
There was progress in another disturbing aspect of life in Wisconsin. Tougher drunk driving legislation passed the state Senate and House this month. One local newspaper, the Daily Herald, asked its readers to pledge that they would not drink and drive. Assistant Managing Editor Pete Wasson talked about the many politicians and community leaders who've been arrested for driving drunk.
This is happening all the time. We kill almost one person a day, on the order of 325 people in drunken driving accidents in Wisconsin every year, and thousands more are injured. These community leaders, I think, have demonstrated a true lack of responsibility. The people who write our laws, in some cases, are incapable of obeying the laws that they themselves have passed.
Pete Wasson of the Wausau Daily Herald. One of the most interesting stories we brought you this past year concerned an amazing cultural exchange in which tribesmen from a remote region of the Amazon rainforest were brought back to UW Stevens Point by an anthropology professor who also had lived with them. Here's a story that we call Why the Why. Wachana Yaimochi takes a small machete blade to a white pine branch, shaving it to the right shape and size for the thatched roof he's putting on a traditional Amazonian round hut, looking very out of place in Stevens Point on a frosty November day. He turns to his son, Ruben, and the two converse in a language known by only 1,500 people in the world. Wachana and Ruben are speaking in Waiwai, the language named for their tribe, an indigenous Amerindian people who live in Guyana, deep in the Amazon jungle.
Weather is different from our place. This place is very cool.
Wachana's small village of 300 people used to be bigger before many of them moved even farther into the jungle to Brazil.
We had a big village, but all the Waiwai them gone away to Brazil.
Are you worried that your people are going to disappear, that there won't be any more Waiwai?
I don't think so.
The woman who brought Wachana and Ruben to Stevens Point, anthropologist Stephanie Alaman, doesn't think the YYs will vanish either.
The YY have a strong sense of themselves and what they want to be. They know they're YYs. They're not trying to not be YYs.
Stephanie's relationship with the tribe goes back to 1997, when she first tried and failed to penetrate the dense jungle.
When I finally reached the farthest place I could go, the next day I came down with a high fever and was diagnosed with malaria.
But Stephanie returned later and spent 8 months with the YY, learning how to grind the poisonous manioc root into tapioca and eating wild pigs, capybaras, and tapirs shot with bows and arrows handcrafted by young tribesmen like Ruben.
When you get a tapir, well, you have to shear.
They'll divide it among families.
Yes.
Let's say Ruben killed the tapir. He would want to give some meat to his father-in-law, to his own family, his mother. maybe somebody who hunted with him.
Ruben Yaimochi is 20 years old and straddling two worlds. His English is good because he attended high school. And while he and his wife and daughter still live with their tribe, he also now has a laptop computer.
Young men his age want a computer, and he knew how to use it. And they have an internet connection in the village now, which is kind of an amazing thing. And he just talked to his wife earlier today and saw their baby.
Change is coming to the YY, who are struggling to adapt to the future without losing their way of life. Ruben thinks he can help by getting a degree in biology, perhaps at UW Stevens Point.
So I want to be a biologist in the future, maybe if I get the degree.
Does that mean you'll move out of the village at some time?
No, but I will be helping the village because our village now is a protected area, and one of the things that we want to preserve is the biodiversity.
Stephanie Alleman thinks that while the YY can learn from us, we can also learn from them.
People long for a deeper relationship with their environment, a closer connection through kinship rather than just a series of random stranger-type relationships. And these are the foundations of all Amerindian cultures.
On Saturday, Ruben and Wachana flew back to the YY village deep in the jungle. But Ruben plans to come back next year to get that biology degree. In Stevens Point, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News. One of the truly enjoyable Route 51 shows of the past year was devoted to the mass appeal of opera music. The program brought together Wisconsin Public Radio's classical music host, Lori Skelton, and George Tepping, the executive director of the Wausau Conservatory of Music. Here they are discussing the opera Carmen and a piece commonly known as the Toreador Song.
I love that strut in the orchestra. It's like Tony Manero at the start of Saturday Night Fever. I mean, this guy is just dripping with testosterone. This is incredibly sexy and powerful, and yeah, you're drawn to it.
And people who aren't into opera would not usually apply adjectives like sexy and powerful to this.
Oh, heavens, opera is so sexy. You've got these huge emotions. You don't go into an opera house and say, yeah, I like you. You say, I love you, or I hate you, I can't stand you. It's there's nothing small about it.
It certainly gets your blood moving, and it sort of reminds me, that particular piece almost reminds me of a Sousa march. I can't imagine that anybody's foot is not tapping.
Wisconsin Public Radio's Lori Skelton and the Wausau Conservatory's George Tepping on Route 51. For the fourth consecutive year, we sponsored free summer concert appearances by the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, whose director Michael Andrews grew up in Wausau and now brings chamber music to the world with an ensemble that's based in South Florida. Andrews again managed to stuff a cello, two violins, and a viola into our small Wisconsin Public Radio studio for a delightful series of performances of works by George Gershwin and Cole Porter. Michael, what else is in the hopper this afternoon?
Well, we have a Cole Porter piece. Cole Porter was a wonderful composer, and one of his most famous pieces is The Beguine, and this is a wonderful arrangement featuring our wonderful violist from Lawrence University, Matt Michalik.
Moberg, thanks for joining us on the Route 51 2009 year-end review. We want to thank everyone who helped with the show this past year, including executive producer Rick Ryer, news director Michael Leland, and our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Also, our online producer, Scott Clark. And remember, you can catch up with our travels on Facebook and Twitter. We're looking forward to an even better 2010 as we begin broadcasting on our new radio station, WHAA, for Adams County, Wisconsin Rapids, and Stevens Point. If you're celebrating tonight and you're drinking, please don't drive. And thanks for your company for the past 12 months. Until next week and next year, we're heading out of town. Thank you.